So you want to be a psychic medium? That's wonderful. You'll likely fail, though, and it's quite a bit less wonderful. In fact, it's among the least pleasant eventualities I'm yet aware of that can befall a person. And by fail, I'm not referring to the financial collapse of an outed fraud, one of those county fair hacks who sense the presence of your loved ones through a crystal ball in exchange for $200. No, I am instead referring to what happens if you stumble during the descent or strike a bad deal with a demonic being or getting played a fool while gallivanting through the depths. The consequences are quite eternal, so do keep that in mind. But we'll get to all that in a bit. But for now, be sure exceedingly, overwhelmingly, unflinchingly, immaculately sure that you appreciate the gravity of this situation, as well as the fact that channeling the dead requires a descent into hell. And that this is indeed the path that you'll walk. If that's the case, then I believe this guide can be of some manner of assistance. So, without further ado, let's begin. How to summon the dead in three simple-ish steps. Step 1. Be sure you can truly communicate with the dead. This one sounds obvious, but you'd be absolutely amazed to learn how many former so-called mediums mistook their own schizophrenia or drug-induced delusions, or even a single experience with a $12 Ouija board from Target as evidence of a genuine spiritual connection to the afterlife. From there, the story is nearly always the same. They jump the gun, start charging fees, and after maybe one or two reasonably pleasant experiences, word would get out in hell there's an idiot on the loose. Then that idiot would get attacked by a big bad guy from the abyss and either get scared off into Christianity, if they're lucky, or will be cursed or killed if they're not. And you don't want to make that mistake. So let me be abundantly clear here. An actual spiritual connection to the afterlife is exceedingly rare. Not only that, but any attempt on your part to delve into the depths of the deep or the abyss when you don't have the necessary spiritual hardware to do so is tremendously unwise. If you think you might have a true current, don't just assume you're a wizard. Contact an expert such as myself or Dr. Davis on Wendingham Boulevard, and we'll gladly run some diagnostics on you for a small fee. Some symptoms of a true current include, but are not limited to, a predisposition to paranormal activity, an innate sense of where deadly happenings and tragedies occur, we'll get to that in a bit, and the occasional communication to you from hell, or somewhere else. These typically manifest as a random and unrecognizable thought that is imprinted upon you in its completed form, as opposed to human thoughts, which, like spoken words, take time to conclude. You can often trace the source of a message by judging the content. If the thought is something like, "You should give that homeless man your lunch," it's probably God. So, confirm it is. Ask the voice if it acknowledges that Christ came in the flesh. And if it says yes, go ahead and give that homeless man your lunch. It'll be worth it. But it doesn't necessarily mean you've got what it takes to be a medium, because God can communicate with whomever he likes. So don't get cocky. He hates that. However, if the thought is something like, rob a bank, and it hits you all at once when a vault heist is the absolute last thing on your mind, well, that's likely a demon. Don't rob a bank, obviously, but take your ability to intercept that message, usually a shout from hell that would normally fall on deaf ears, as a sign that you might have some kind of deeper connection to the spiritual realms. Then come pay me a visit, and I'll confirm or deny your intuition. The operative word is pay. I do accept cash and checks and all major credit cards, except American Express. Only after you've confirmed your connection should you attempt to travel to the realms. I can't emphasize that enough. Step 2. Know how to identify conduits. Like I mentioned in passing above, An experienced medium has likely fine-tuned their innate ability to walk into a room or an alleyway or out onto a field and know with conviction something terrible happened there. This, of course, signifies the presence of a conduit, a doorway into the spiritual side, sometimes deliberately placed by an experienced medium or cult member or other spiritual wanderer, and sometimes a rough hole ripped into the veil by brute force of concentrated negative energy. Now, an experienced medium like myself could walk into the conduit and tell you without a second thought, suicide! Just by nature of the gray-tinted spiritual scent of the place, or murder! Because it smells like red and black, or battle! Because the sheer amount of accumulated suffering is unmistakable, and also because there will likely be a historical plaque and some tourists nearby. Now, if you're new to all this, however, you probably won't be able to snap your fingers and call that terrible thing from exactly what it was. It'll just feel like something is off here, like the air is out of place, or like you're being watched. That's because it is, and you are. But after a few visits to conduits, you'll begin to get the hang of it. And you'll be able to tell the difference between good conduits, a proper, stable gateway through which you can work, and a bad conduit. Anything else, that be it a two-way door established by some Satan-worshipping cult which demons are entering, or a collapsible conduit, which is usually a trap set by malicious demons designed to lure naive spiritual wanderers into the depths and then have a doorway snap shut behind them. Well, from there, you'll be able to dial up this skill even more, eventually reaching the point where you can pinpoint exactly what kind of tragedy, if any, is responsible for the existence of any given door. There is an even higher rumored level of skill here in which you can see into the spiritual realm through the conduit without having to pass through it, although I've yet to encounter any credible accounts of its implementation. Also, keep in mind that if the enemy is in range, well, so are you. Be careful. Now, if you're going to be a medium in the traditional sense, delving into the afterlife on behalf of a grieving, deep-pocketed widow, then, unfortunately, you'll be spending a good chunk of your professional time around the worst conduits, like suicide. But most often than not, the dead will have become the dead through more natural means, like old age, cancer. No less tragic for your paying customer, of course, but less spiritually chaotic than some of the alternatives. In those cases, you may not have completed conduits to work with, since not enough pain and agony have existed at the time of death to completely force open a door. Instead, you might have a depression. No, not the blue and black scented depression that likes to linger around the suicide conduits, but a depression like an area of the veil that's thinner than normal, but not yet a gaping hole. If you run into one of those, you'll have to finish opening the conduit yourself. Eventually, you'll be able to open them anywhere, but these are good for training purposes. These require a somewhat time-consuming ritual that involves salt and herbs and Latin chants and all that, but I'm not going to dive into too much detail because I don't want any new wanderers out there giving this a shot without supervision. Again, come see me for more personalized training. Oh, I also accept PayPal. 3. Know the layers of hell. Hell is essentially a commonly used term for anywhere in the afterlife that's not heaven. And it's where you'll be doing all of your work. Communication to heaven is called prayer, because typically God won't tolerate any of this nonsense in his backyard. But the image your mind likely conjured up, that of fire and sulfur and gnashing teeth and eternal damnation, well, this is descriptive of the lake of fire, which technically falls under the category. It's a fairly broad definition, to be fair, but it's kind of its own thing. So don't worry. Nobody gets that far down until after the judgment, or unless they've really screwed up a trip into the rest of hell. And that would take some doing. Also, to clear up another but equally relevant misconception, no, Dante's Inferno does not adequately describe hell. It's a literary classic, but a textbook, it is not. There are no 9 layers of hell. There are 4. Which, to be fair, do become increasingly horrible with each descent. The bottom, most of which is the lake of fire. The first layer. The one where murder victims often reside seeing as how they're not here because of their own behavior, alongside the billions who lived reasonably decent lives and then died of reasonably natural causes, is called elsewhere. If you're thinking it doesn't sound so bad, well, it depends on what you're comparing it to. If you're comparing it to Earth, then elsewhere, the closest thing I know of to purgatory, might as well be the Lake of Fire. But if you're comparing it to the Lake of Fire, then elsewhere, might as well be heaven. The definition, the defining characteristics of elsewhere is the emptiness. There's no hideous monsters here, although sometimes demons pass through to get to the mortal realm. No volcanoes, no lava, burning sulfur, torture chambers. Elsewhere is just unfinished dimensional space. Colorless, scentless, featureless. You wander the emptiness of elsewhere until the judgment, and believe me, the wait is a whole lot longer down here than it is up there. The good news, in case you haven't already realized, is that the majority of your trips will go this far, but no further. Most people weren't killed by self-inflicted shotgun blasts to the head, after all. They were killed by cheeseburgers. And so they spend much of their time in elsewhere. So if Billy Joe and Susie want to conjure up Granny Smith, and assuming Granny Smith wasn't a guard at Auschwitz, you'll probably find her wandering around the emptiness of elsewhere. Somewhere near the spiritual end of her conduit. Confused and alone. And all too happy to see a visitor from the mortal realm. And yes, their proximity to the conduit is why it is advisable to begin the seance at or near the physical location of their death, lest you be forced to spend a good chunk of eternity trying to track them down in the emptiness. Once you locate Granny Smith, you approach slowly, without making sudden movements, and introduce yourself. Then you'll likely get this.
Oh, Billy and Susie sent you. How are they? Are they eating their vegetables? Susie's not still dating that nasty boy from the heavy metal garage band, is she? Oh, and let me tell you about this one time when Billy was 5, or maybe 6, or 7. No, it couldn't have been 7 because this was before he got into his Batman phase and yada 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 yada. Stop them here, if you must, and explain that although time is nearly no means and elsewhere, it still has it on Earth, and you still live there. So to you, time is valuable. So if you wouldn't mind, Granny Smith, let's get you up to the surface so you can talk to your grandchildren. In some cases, though, training is required to keep them calm. This is especially the case for recently dead who are only just now coming to grips with the horror of their fate, and who might treat you like a drowning person treats a lifeguard. For a person who did indeed drown to death, their panic will just roll over into a typical case of afterlife madness. They'll succumb to the panic. They'll jump on you, scratch you, try to pull you down to pull themselves up. And for this reason, it's also a good idea to never accept contracts to channel the recently deceased to begin with. Give them some time to process their situation. And for the love of God, do not try to be so cruel as to even inadvertently give them the false hope of their coming permanently back to life. Seeing the face of the dead, as they realize their long prayed and pleaded for that trip back to the mortal realm was incomplete and temporary? Oh, that's soul-crushing. Anyway, I myself have a pre-prepared statement for the dead that bores them out of any desire to react to my presence and reckless violence. It also serves to outline a number of legal considerations, so it's probably in your best interest to draft something similar once you start on your practices. To whom it may concern, congratulations! Your loved ones have purchased my psychic channeling services and would like to summon you for a temporary period to speak with them in the mortal realm. You may be permitted to use my vocal cords and facial expressions to communicate for the duration of this seance. Be advised, the conversation will last no longer than 1 Earth hour. During that time, you may not attempt to possess my body or in any way try to have your conscience transferred to any other person in the mortal realm. Any attempt to violate these rules that can be identified as an attempted violation by a reasonable observer, including but not limited to an attempt to retain control of my body beyond what is permitted or the time allotted, will result in the immediate termination of the proceedings, at which point you will be returned to elsewhere and blacklisted by the Association of Psychic Mediums and Interdimensional Communicators from the further contact of the living. Please proceed through the outlined conduit here in a calm and orderly fashion.
Now, this brings up another point, too. You'll want to get with them and be prepared to fight for control of your body if things go south. And there's a number of self-deliverance methods that we can discuss once you're in my office. And things may very well go south, unless you've developed a reputation as a wanderer not to be trifled with, which, of course, could take some time. Hell, I once met a fresh out of basic medium in Elsewhere who claimed that he'd been locked out of his own body during a seance and trapped in Elsewhere. Guy's name? Goodness, what was his name? Ted Bundy. By the time I assisted the real Ted back into his body, he woke up in the electric chair and he was sent straight back down to the third layer of hell. Oh, poor bastard. Oh, Ted. Oh, God. Ted was a great guy. That didn't really happen. Although, it's a fun cautionary tale in the business that's frequently used to haze the new guys. Oh, I have, however, seen careless mediums get tricked into being possessed. Which meant, of course, that they had to be exorcised. And that's no fun for anyone. Even if the spirit being evicted is just a desperate old Uncle Joe and not Balthazar, Demon King of Locusts, whatever. One last thing. When you channel, you need to stay spiritually clean and be consistently scrubbing unwanted stuff out of your system. The dead are going to be sitting in your body for an hour, after all, and depending on who it is, they can leave behind all manner of nasty garbage. Some of them are smarter and use the seance as an opportunity to unload some bitterness or lust or unforgiveness on you so that you won't suffer from it back in Elsewhere, where there's no carnal or practicality to these things, and where you see them for what they are, spiritual anchors around your neck. When I first got started, I remember being uncharacteristically angry and uptight, wanting a smoke. That wasn't like me. After inhaling a pack of cigarettes, I put two together and traced it all back to Benjamin Gartner. Angry son of a bitch. His kids had summoned him through me a few days prior. Now it all becomes easier to scrape off once you identify the source, but still. Yeah, you'll want to stay on your toes. The second layer of hell is called the Deep. This realm is reserved primarily for people worse than those trapped in Elsewhere, but better than those trapped in the third layer, like Ted Bundy. Typically, you'll find your liars, adulterers, scammers, racists, generally more unpleasant than average people down here. But because the line between decent and not-so-decent people is very poorly defined in life, the second veil, allegedly set between the Deep and Elsewhere, is thin, than some people argue. Combined, the Deep isn't appreciably more than a dark corner of the upper plane. I don't like how Europe and Asia aren't really two different land masses. For that reason, it's easy enough to wander right into it, and not until you're well within its boundaries that you realize, hey, it's darker and hotter here. For the spiritual attuned. For anyone who's seen a horror movie, and for that matter, hot and dark, is almost never a good combination. So, turn around, walk the other way as soon as possible. Luckily for you, it's as easy to leave the Deep as it is to enter, assuming that you're a wanderer and not a deceased. To be honest, there isn't much to be said about the Deep, other than when a client describes an appropriately, but not overwhelmingly shitty loved one who will be brought back from the dead. And I know I'll be visiting the Deep. I usually charge extra. When the negative attitudes of people here are amplified immensely, they're not murderers, but the... I mean, that doesn't mean that you want to be hanging around them for any longer than absolutely necessary. Moving right along. Of all the readily accessible layers of hell, the third, known as the Abyss, is by several orders of magnitude the worst. Like the Deep, it's hot and dark. Like Elsewhere, it's infinite and desolate. But those things don't even come close to describing the true horrors of this place. This layer, of course, is reserved for your Ted Bundys, your Genghis Khans, your Adolf Hitlers, your trolls on YouTube comments. And yes, you can go meet those guys if you want. They're down there. But at the time you see what's happening to them, you'll almost pity them for their plight, which is saying something indeed. For those of us who fancy ourselves as having a thread of human decency. Now, there is one commonly held idea of hell that isn't documented in any scripture, but is prevalent enough in culture that it's worth considering. The image of demons running hell and torturing people. Yeah. This is that place right here. In the Lake of Fire, they'll be tortured along with us. And in the upper and mortal planes, they may only dip their feet in the water for fun, but in the Abyss, well, that's where they live. That's where they play. To answer the less interesting questions you have, no, I don't take any contracts that involve a trip to the Abyss, nor should you. So if you come to my office and ask me to channel your murder rapist mafioso of a great uncle, sorry, pal, keep it moving. Not about to get down there and try to argue with Abandon and Leviathan about borrowing White Power Steve for a bit. I promise, I'll bring him right back, sure, yeah. Even if they'd let me take him, no doubt. After forcing me to bargain my soul as collateral for that of a loved one, White Power Steve would be so desperate to escape that he wouldn't care about my little legal contract I cited earlier. He would wreck me out of sheer panic. And I'd possess my body and, interestingly enough, probably use it to go to church and feed the hungry or do anything else that he could think of to do so that God would somehow change the man that he is. Before you say, well, he's not really changed, he's just sorry he got caught. No. The unspeakable horrors of the Abyss would scrub even Hitler so clean that he would volunteer as a synagogue janitor out of the goodness of his heart, assuming that they ever let him out. To be thoroughly honest, though, I've never been to the Abyss myself. Of course I haven't. I only know from what I've been told, and from the one time in which, when I was a new medium, I wandered too far into the deep and ran up against the third veil. I pressed my ear up against the wall, unsure of its nature, and I could hear the screams and the laughter and the grinding. And then I heard the voice whisper my name from what sounded like an inch away. I was filled with such existential, eternal, inexplicable dread that, well, I've never fully shaken the experience from my dreams. I could describe the feeling in an appropriate metaphor. How could I? I feel like I was standing at the edge of hell, watching the apocalypse unfold before my eyes. And I was. Quite literally. Like I said, I only know from anecdotes. There was one wanderer vastly more experienced than myself whose tales I'll perhaps recant here one day, if you would allow it. And from rumor, lies in the Abyss, to see if how it was described to me, an infinite plane of torturous, monstrous, cacophonous, terrible, hideous machines designed to torment and to terrorize, to dehumanize and to rend flesh from bone and soul from spirit. What word is there for that other than hell? Anyway, those are tales from another time. And for now, I hope you've at least given some manner of second thought to this choice, career. You're still game. We'll find out soon enough. Come by my office. I accept cashier's checks and money orders. We are just getting started.